Hello and welcome to a wonderful new episode of Research VR, where we dig deep from the realms of virtual reality. So we are the podcast about the science of VR. You might figure it out already, I'm not Azad, but I'm doing the introduction. The reason for that is that Azad is not here today because I'm recording locally in Germany, as I have a wonderful guest, Dmitry Michalchuk. Hi.
Hi.
And you are, in fact, from the company called Project Tesla Suite, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. I actually tried the product before, so I will reference to it during the podcast. But first, what is the product?
It's a full-body haptic suit, which also has climate control built in, motion capture, and some biometrical systems that measure body's activity.
So how can the listener imagine? Is this kind of a suit that I have to put on?
And yeah, it's pretty much very similar to a sports garment with a zip-up top and trousers that the user puts on. It turns the power on, and that's it. So, well, you would be ready to go in Germany.
Okay, now before we just go to the suit itself, what's your background?
Well, I studied as an electronics engineer a while ago. I studied microelectronics, computing, and electronics in general. Then I moved on to marketing of all the gadgets and obviously electronic devices.
Mm-hmm. And the company is based in UK, right?
Yes, we're based in London, but we have another base in Belarus, in Minsk, which is growing really fast. So we kind of moved all of the R&D there for now.
Now, you also are right now on a road trip to Europe, right?
Yes, we've covered France, and now we're traveling through Germany, nearly reached the northern, the highest northern point.
Yeah, it's actually very great that you came to my place of living. So we're actually right now in Osnabrück. So it's like the first time a guest is actually coming and I don't have to come for him, which is great. It feels so good. I mean, if more guests are coming, it's easier life for me. But you also have been recently on the CES, which made a lot of fuss, right?
Yes, that was actually surprising to be called the most interesting product of CES. We got interviewed by all the biggest news media outlets there, like the CNNs and BBCs and CNBCs and so on and so forth. I actually support their excitement because, you know, driverless cars, we've seen it, VR headsets, well, who hasn't tried it? Nobody had seen a full-body haptic suit of this quality.
That's for sure. So let's go a little bit back in time. How did it all start? How did the company start?
It was an idea that started about 5 to 6 years ago. And the principal inventors, one of them was studying robotics engineering, and the other one was a graphics designer, a 3D graphics designer for the games. They've been working on a 5D cinema project, which involves building a big like a cabin with all the chairs inside that blows the air when you go through the movie. And they thought, what if the person was moving, for example, looked away for a few seconds, so he misses the wind blow, and then they miss part of the movie and the whole concept of being immersed. So they thought, we need to go skin level. That's when they first conjured the idea that a suit would be a nice device to actually transmit the sensations. So the Tesla suit itself started as a purely haptic suit. And for the first 3 years before the MVP was built, the guys were trying to, you know, bootstrap, make some money to buy components, to actually build it, put it all together and present it in front of some sort of investor.
Yes. So when we speak about haptics, how does it work?
The haptics is based on the electrical stimulation principle, so it's EMS and TENS are combined. We can stimulate both the skin surface and go deep into the muscles.
What's the difference on the hardware level?
On the hardware level, One thing is a frequency separation. So these are different levels, and then we use the wave in different ways. So to basically travel between the surface of the skin and go deep.
What is the difference in sensation between the skin and the muscle sensation?
Now, basically, the skin will provide the sense of touch, the sense of surfaces, you know, that kind of little sensations. And then anything bigger, like impacts or kickbacks, we need to engage the muscles.
Mm-hmm. So the founder started doing just a haptic part. And when was the first prototype ready?
The first prototype was built at the end of 2015. Back then, it was presented in London for the first time to a BBC documentary about remote relationships. That was the first time it actually seen the world.
Remote relationships, I see.
Yeah.
So, wonderful world of teledildonics.
Well,
I mean, not really, but...
It was kind of the other side of relationships. I think BBC cannot talk about teledildonics. Yeah, but... They were actually trying to say that, some people or many people have actually started having relationships through social networks and so on. So that becomes truly a remote relationship and people seldom see each other, but then they cannot exchange the hugs and they cannot actually be present.
No, true. Yeah. I mean, the sense of touch and warmth from a loved one is definitely one of the... more pleasant feelings. Now, then you started a Kickstarter campaign, or was there something in between?
Yeah, that's about when we could actually film for the Kickstarter. So we started doing that. We put together a video presentation and the campaign that we built for early January 2016. But we launched it to actually gauge how the public would actually accept or dislike the idea of a product like that. We set the price high and the goal was way too high, just so we didn't reach it accidentally. And this is where we use it as a marketing tool, really. We started traveling, we started with CES, which was coinciding back in the day in January as well. And so we met a lot of support with a lot of interested parties. We talked to different companies. They gave us a few ideas. So we went back, canceled the Kickstarter, and sat back to the drawing board and actually redesigned the whole suit.
So in fact, I remember when you launched the Kickstarter, we even talked about it on this podcast. And we were on the one hand very excited, but also a little bit skeptical. Mm. I have to tell the audience that I tried today, the Tesla suit, one of the prototypes. I have filmed a little bit of footage and I hope I can maybe upload it so you will see that it actually works, because it's not a hoax, it's actually really working, and that's why I'm more excited to go further in the timeline. You ended the Kickstarter and then you redesigned the whole product, and where are you now?
Well, we changed a lot of systems. We first of all, the haptics itself, we reworked the principle of it. We moved away from many of the users were relating it to tense belts that were being sold, you know, that don't really work for...
What are tense belts?
The belts for this training your six-pack.
Oh, yes. Yeah, okay.
So many people say, that's probably like the tens, the belts that are there for stimulation. So we went back, and because we needed to get like a very broad range of sensations, we got to the finer point. We added many more channels. I mean, at the moment,
how many channels do you have?
At the moment, the full suit has 68, but I think development kit that we're going to release will receive probably 100 points.
100 points all over the body.
Yeah, all over the body.
But not the hands yet.
The hands will be covered by the gloves.
So they come separate later on.
Yeah, they come separate. They're more complex.
How many points do you expect for the gloves to be there?
We'll start with little numbers, talking about every finger will receive a point, so we could actually touch things and try. And then the palm will have some points. Talking about probably 7 to 8. And then will go higher resolution. But this is where the complexity begins, because we play with neural endings of the body and they are actually used for stimulating the different organ, internal organs as well. So we have to be, we have to study that a bit more carefully. Yeah.
Could you quickly explain how the process of feeling something works out? So I guess there is the haptic sensation and some kind of vibration. How does it work?
Yeah, basically, we have fingerprints on our skin help us to actually differentiate between different surfaces. If we were to touch the wood, for example, because of the...
The surface structure that is kind of more glossy, I guess.
Exactly. We can feel different structures because it has different texture to it.
So when I move my fingerprint over it, it kind of makes this micro vibrations that...
Exactly. Actually, the skin has a micro vibration and electrical signal goes to the brain signaling that this is that surface where we're getting this many vibrations.
Is the heat also important of the object? So the heat exchange between my finger and the surface?
Yeah. So one of the three reactions, basically, we use electrical signals to the brains for the touch. We also use speed of exchange of temperature. So if we touch wood and metal in the same room, effectively they're the same temperature, but we will feel it differently because the speed of temperature exchange is different. Mm. And we have a chemical reaction, but we cannot influence the cells in the skin yet. So.
No, it's also good that you can't do that maybe. And you're trying to mimic, or you're mimicking actually all of this the two of the three.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Now the Tesla suit has not only the electrical muscle stimulation, but it has more sensors, right?
That's absolutely right. Yes.
So you have IMUs that allow to track the rough body position.
Yeah, we track full skeletal movement. So basically, we can recreate the avatar of the person inside the VR. We use climate control, so heat and cold can be transmitted, and we use some of the biometrical systems which read the ECG, the EMG, muscle activity, and galvanic skin resistance.
So ECG is electrocardiogram.
Yeah.
Cardiogram. So you can basically measure through the skin resistance, the skin conductance, how aroused or stressed I am. You can measure through the heart rate, basically the same, also the state of my mind. And I assume you could also measure muscle tone.
Yeah, muscle
tone. So toning. Maybe when I'm frightened, I'm kind of stiffening up and my whole muscle tone increase.
Exactly.
And one of the very interesting parts of your suit that I was not aware of before I actually tried it and we talked with you is that you cannot only track the body through the IMUs. Mm-hmm. The IMUs basically give you very precise information over a short period of time, but they obviously have a drift. So we all know there is the axon. Whatever it's called, the Axon IMU suit, it's kind of working, but it's not perfect. But you have basically a similar device as the Mio was, so basically a muscle
myography sensors.
But you have them literally over the whole body.
Yeah.
So you, in addition to the information you get from the IMUs, also can not only induce current, but also measure the current from the muscles, right?
That's correct, yeah.
And how would the process work of basically measuring all my muscle tone, all my muscle activity, and combining them with some IMUs? You kind of fuse them through sensor fusion, through a machine learning algorithm, or?
Basically, well, the suit is already a wearable computer. So that allows us to read and process data on board. And we can combine the readings from all of the sensors and make them mutually calibrating, self-calibrating in real time. So it adds to the precision of the measuring the body motion. It adds to the understanding of how the person is, the person's activity, basically, how the person is performing. If the person is not moving, but the heart rate goes up, we know that the heart attack is coming, so we can call for emergencies and so on and so forth. Or if the person is going through the training, for example, very important to know how stressed the person is getting, how confused the person is, you know, from that situation he's put through, and it's good to gauge or give the person some additional help within the VR.
Yes. So one of the issues I would assume is when you're wearing electrodes on your body, and I know it from my own research, is when you sweat, your resistance changes. That's why you can actually measure the galvanic skin conductance and measure how much a person is aroused. But when I imagine I have a suit that is covering my whole body and it plays with my muscles and I start to sweat because I'm playing a game. The suit needs basically to readjust itself all the time, basically recalibrating itself. And I guess it uses a ground electrode or electrodes.
It actually measures resistance in real time. So it will adjust the coefficient, the multipliers, in different places.
It basically levels them out.
Yeah.
Because it knows all the body parts and kind of can level it out, right?
Absolutely, yes. This is why, part of it we use for create more comfort for the for the user to begin with. And at the same time, with the nervous endings and the sweat coming into play and nervous endings getting used to electrical stimulation, we might need to readjust the levels anyway. So, and that's why we're just monitoring everything in real time.
Nice. So there is also products like the Manus Glove or different other, let's say, wearable devices that give you capability of tracking either fingers or your whole body that do not necessarily work on the muscle activity, but rather work on electrodes that you bend. I think there are also some suits that were trying to do it. What is the benefit of your approach combining IMU with the muscle activity measurement? And would it be beneficial to actually in a long-term future implement those electrodes that bend and change resistance? Or do you think that such a technology is not very good?
I mean, the technology that changes resistance with bending is actually quite good. We looked at it and we actually made our own sensors back in the day. For the glove, we went through multiple systems, of which there's more than 10, I think, and not many people are actually aware of. But in our lab, we're trying to achieve the best result for actually the precision of the fingers, because those motions are very small. And what's important is that we always are capable to grab small things, to actually hold them so they don't actually shake. So we take into account all of the feedback from the users, all of the previous experiences and failures maybe, and trying to build a product that's going to be a high-end product, but for the affordable price.
Now, when we speak about the biometric system you have, you can also, in theory, measure my breathing, right?
That's right, yes.
So breathing, heart rate, skin conductance, what else is there left? Maybe oxygen level?
Yeah, oxygen levels are pretty
basically LED, and you could technically measure it also quite easily. Is there anything that you're not covering yet? You can measure from the body except the head?
We don't have covered the head yet.
But from the body, is there anything else you could measure?
Well, basically, we can pick up when we enable all of the sensors. We also take the skin temperature, but basically we take the real time measurement because people tend to have, after certain activities and after getting to a certain level of tiredness, the temperature, core temperature, might change.
Mm-hmm. So do you measure it only on one point or across the body?
We measure in the closest, thinnest skin points, basically, of which there aren't many. There's,
so I guess my palms?
It's the
Armpits.
The armpits, and
Where you put usually the measuring device,
thermometer.
Nice.
So it's the same thing, and because it's clothing, we
can just basically integrate it.
Yeah.
Now maybe we should also talk about the clothing itself. What kind of fabric is it? Is it some kind of synthetics?
Yeah, for now we're using a synthetic, like sports fabrics. Mm-hmm. That we picked up off shelf, really, to quickly build a prototype, because at the moment we concentrate mainly on electronics and integrating the systems. But now we're working with fabric manufacturers to actually create the fabric that we wanted.
You're really in need of something really high tech, I guess, because basically the body sweats. So
yeah. So we'll take the we'll use the moisture control. The temperature control has to be passive for as much as we can, so to save on battery, and actually give it to the sensors and the haptics itself.
And I guess also it needs to be light and also machine washable, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we did announce that it's going to be machine washable, so we're working towards that.
I guess it's not easy, right?
Definitely not a straightforward task to solve.
Yeah.
Yeah, with all the electrical parts and sensors and everything else, we needed to go through a lot of testing. And
I agree. Is the problem the detergents that people are using, or could you just get warm water, put it in, it would be less harmful for the electronics than adding some kind of washing powder?
Well, obviously, aggressive detergents will definitely wear out the suit quicker, and the actual fabrics quicker, because sports fabrics, they don't like too much chemicals. In a normal like hand cycle in the washing machine, we have a dedicated washing machine in the lab now that's going through all these washes, enjoying the suit itself. So far so good. So we hopefully by the time we release it should be like tip top.
Have you experimented with electric conductance threads? So there are like those sewing kits with
We experimented. That's what we built the first like prototype zero, we call it, out of. We used those threads and we found out that there are so many varieties of it, and we even consulted a massive manufacturing facility that was looking into going to smart fabrics. We consulted them on actually what to produce in the next 10 years. I think they needed a plan, and they knew that we were.
So did you stick to the threads, or did you prefer maybe other types of?
We actually moved away from that. Found other ways of. Basically, for the threads, they're too thin. We needed for haptics, for EMS, we needed higher current.
And also shielding, I guess, right?
Yeah, then shielding is another issue. And then routing is another issue, because we run effectively a data bus. We needed less noise. We needed to be shielded and so on and so forth. So a lot of problems that we actually discovered and actually solved. But also the cost of manufacturing. I mean, threads are still, compared to our way of doing it,
way too expensive.
A bit more expensive, yeah.
Do you see those threads developing and at some point being suitable for your product?
No, absolutely. I mean, the big manufacturers haven't started producing them yet. So
it's just a growing market.
Yeah, it's a very relatively new market. And
Now, when I was wearing the suit, I was shooting some enemies down. And when I was shooting, I felt a recoil. When they were shooting at me, I felt this sensation that a bullet hit me. And what it reminded me of is somehow remotely, obviously, I mean, everyone mentions it. Let's also do it. Ready Player One.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, I think you chose your marketing efforts very right, because right now the movie is soon coming out and everyone will be hyped. And definitely people will say, oh, it's, your suit is the one from Ready Player One. So maybe you should partner up with them and do a special edition. But what I was thinking more about is not just what you do right now. It's this haptics, which I think is very impressive. But I once was listening to a talk from Pedro Lopez, who is from the Hasso-Plattner Institute, and it was on interactive systems based on electrical muscle stimulation. And what he was showing at the it was a Berlin event where he gave a talk, was not only the zero gravity project that he had, where you could actually feel the weight of objects, which I think we will come back to in a moment, because I think it's also possible with your suit. But there was also a way to teach you how to do certain movements. So when you would grab an object and you would do it in the wrong way, the electrodes would stimulate your arm and the arm would just magically go away, so you couldn't grab it. The system was observing how you do things, and if you would do them wrong, it would basically move your arm. So the first question is, can your suit in general do the zero gravity or basically the feeling of gravity? And the other one is, could it technically teach me movement at some point?
Oh, absolutely. This is what we started already toying with in the lab. We started, we're creating the gun kickback for the game demo that we have. So that's a good representation of that. We can get the user to move in a certain way that teaches how to do things, for example, re-aiming the gun again, it's one of the non-trivial tasks, basically. Mm-hmm. At the same time, yes, we can. We started playing with simulated gravity, although the body itself is kind of limited to where we can apply it to, but hands are certainly good example of actually creating the weight for the objects that mm-hmm. Can be lifted up and down or pushed when you're trying to push some objects.
How does it work? Muscles basically working against each other, the contractor and the rejector?
The anti muscles would create the tension, the sense of tension, and then the forward going muscles are creating the work mm-hmm. for the one that you want to mm-hmm. actually make.
Can you also make my arm kind of move in space?
And absolutely, yes. Because we can tap onto muscles, we can work on with both nervous endings that correspond to opening, for example, the hand or and closing the hand. But also, we work with bigger muscles for actually moving them as well. Mm-hmm. So we can do that.
Now, those are a lot, like really a lot of different features and a lot of different abilities that the product has, and I'm pretty sure that the suit will have more features, some kind of feeling in my gut that there might be more to come, who knows. But if we just stay with the prototype you have right now, what are the use cases that are kind of maybe obvious, maybe not that obvious? So you mentioned in the pre-talk we had training, right?
Yeah, training is a big thing. Basically, with EMS, we tap onto such a thing called muscle memory. And so repetition through electrical stimulation, and at the same time when we motion capture it at the same time and actually validate each motion and say, right, this one is correct, this one is incorrect. We can put the person through a very fast training, and people will actually remember things not through their eyes or just motorical memory, but also through muscle memory. So it has another dimension of remembering things.
And so when I'm training how to put out a fire,
yeah,
I basically could enhance my experience through the suit.
But even something easier than that, even before putting the fire, escaping the fire. Mm. How many times people are actually doing the drills in the office to stand up, go left, go right, open the door,
yeah,
get out? Never.
I had to do it. Well,
like once in a year,
I had to do it in my old university because the building was in danger of fire. So they actually had to train everyone who was working there to exit very fast to extinguish fire. But usually you don't do it, no.
Absolutely. And then even then, you are not really experiencing stress because it's a drill, which is the safe environment. You know, it's safe. It's just a drill. Yeah. So you don't really pay attention.
You're actually more annoyed.
Exactly. But what if you were put in the VR? And through the suit, we can create hot environments. So basically, you can sense the heat, add a little bit of smell into the room, mm-hmm. and that's when you start.
Yeah.
And if nobody actually tells you that it's not the real fire, then you are put in a serious stressful situation. Mm-hmm. And then what?
And you can
do,
prove it with the muscle with the skin conductance.
Exactly. And so we can measure the level of stress, and then when the person is put through that. Now what they do, many people forget that the door is opening towards you, not outward, for example, and they still keep banging mm-hmm. and banging. And so there are so many mistakes when people are actually in a difficult situation in stress, and they believe they're in stress, they just lock up.
Yes.
Some people just forget to stand up because their knees go weak and they can't move. And that's where we can start training people to actually start moving. We can incentivize them through haptic feedback, and make for them to make sure they actually react to the problem, not mm-hmm. lock up.
I see.
So a lot of that, you know, starting from little things going to a big thing. Like
what else than training? So recreational usage is pretty clear, but at some point, I think we also talked when I was wearing it about telepresence.
Yeah, telepresence itself is a big thing. I mean, Boston University was conducting research for the past 20, 25 years, I think, on creating that sense of being elsewhere through the digital worlds, and they figured out that electrical stimulation is the only way mm-hmm. to actually simulate that. And so that's what we're working towards. We started engaging several universities. We're now going through legal paperwork and stuff mm-hmm. like that, how we're going to share the IP. But overall, that's where it's heading to, basically.
I can only encourage to go to universities and actually give those usually kind of locked up, science workers the ability to get early stage developer kits. Because I remember when I was doing science, it was super tough to talk to startups, super uneasy. It was really difficult to actually get access to things that are not consumer ready, because obviously a lot of startups focus on the consumer first and they just don't care about science. But if you want to improve your product and if you want to understand the science behind it, it's always good to, basically figure out good teams, give them access. Yeah. And I think it's a very good idea that you're doing it, and it's also great. So what do you expect from those scientific work to come out?
Well, we still need to understand how the body is affected by EMS, for example.
So long-term studies or...
Long-term studies, short-term studies. We're moving, or we're actually feeling that we have to move into medical field as well. So rehabilitation is a mm-hmm. big thing. We can relearn, reteach basically mobility to certain parts of the body.
Absolutely.
Actually all of the parts of the body. Yeah. We can help with dementia. There's been a lot of studies actually shown that VR itself helps with
that's
dementia
for sure.
a lot.
How would you add value?
But because of the haptics, working on a subconscious level, people, we bypass the need for them for people to actually realize what they're doing.
True.
So in dementia, people forget certain things, functionalities, and so we don't need any other organ to help out to relearn before that.
True.
Before then, so visual is a big thing, but at the same time, haptics, which works absolutely. On a subconsciousness level,
absolutely. And when you speak about rehabilitation, it's pretty clear. I think we talked about the medical use cases of VR like 20, 30 episodes ago, where we talked about back pain and other cases. So even if you give a patient ability to train in VR home, you still need to track their success. And I mean, putting few Kinects there, it's kind of very tedious.
Mm-hmm.
And you definitely need to track their body, their performance. And if you already can also measure how strongly their muscles are active and in when situations, the doctor obviously can remotely, that's why telepresence, I guess, also a point, basically understand how the patient is doing and help him out, maybe, even level out, I guess, some parts of the electrode stronger so he gets support, right?
Absolutely. So the doctor can actually interfere with that, help out. And at the same time, different programs, using machine learning, we can put programs in place that will actually learn from the user first as to their limitations, and then we'll actually proactively help them to work towards the goals to complete them the way it's meant to be.
Definitely. What are the next applications? So medical is clear, training is clear. What else could you do, I guess?
Talking about adding that extra level of immersiveness in movies.
Movies, for sure, but that's more recreational usage, right?
I guess.
Movies still take some time to... Your product is available to the regular user.
To the end user. But the projects, they actually take 2 to 3 years. High quality. So we're talking to developers. Now we want to see developers coming.
You have an SDK, right? So people can actually download it and start developing already.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's not like you need to develop it for too long. Integration will take probably a day or two for the haptics, and then if you want to toy with motion capture,
when developers are really interested and they contact you, is there a chance that they have access to a Tesla suit, or is it more like right now virtual?
Well, it's
or both.
It's good to have it because it's difficult to explain haptics through words or videos. Even haptics needs to be experienced.
Yeah.
And so the developers will actually want to know or want to play with their own sensations. We created a lot of software that we bundle with the suit that actually help to create new sensations. And maybe somebody can come up with things that
I actually saw the software. I hope I can show it in the video that I will post. Also on our Discord channel, please remind, a small reminder, we have a Discord channel. Feel free to join. Hopefully you will also join at some point our Discord channel and talk maybe with a audience, where so in the software you actually could or at least what I understood from a brief pick at your tablet, you could click together certain areas on the activation and it would basically simulate a certain thing. So you cannot only address single electrodes, and you don't only have the typical software-driven approach where you have to open an editor and write different values, but actually have a nice software where you can actually configure and test it out on yourself, which eases out the process, I guess.
Yeah, it's just like great.
Visual software. Programming, visual editing. Nice. Now, you have been developing this product for some time, and when do you think will the first, enterprise product be ready?
We're talking about probably Q4 this year. We're going to start shipping the first dev kits.
How much are the dev kits? Are they already on sale, pre-order, or...?
We haven't opened up pre-orders yet. I'm still drafting the terms and conditions on that. But talking about a price point maybe between 2,500 to 3,500 for the dev kit, this will include the support, the engineering support.
Sure. But your aim at the final product to be, you said in the CES interview, one of them around the console level or slightly higher, right?
Oh, yeah. We want to drive the price down for the consumer.
Sure.
Definitely.
You need mass production for that. That's clear. I mean, the dev kit is expensive because it's a dev kit. You get support.
Yeah.
You can talk to the developers. I totally get that. That's also very, very nice. One of the use cases, coming back to the, it was authentication, right?
Yeah. We talked about that, the fact that biometrical systems will actually can create the readings that create a unique signature. So each body is different.
Like fingerprint scanning, right?
Yeah, it's even better than that. It's fingerprints can be copied on so many levels. Now systems actually detect whether the skin is live or not, but still, it's a lot easier to simulate live skin than live body itself.
No,
especially
for sure.
Combining multiple systems. So super high quality authentication can be a use case for that.
At least combining encryption. Yeah.
Yeah. Forget the passwords. You just put the jacket on. It knows it's you. You just enter the
So system. Before we end, the suit itself is worn on an basically naked body, right?
Yeah.
That's how it works. You basically put it on. I assume the later part, so the final suit will have also legs, right?
Because it already has that.
Already legs.
It's just we didn't bring
it. Yes, sure. It makes total sense. So you will have basically at some point clothes. Right now you already have the legs and the upper and the lower torso. And you also have different versions for females and males, right?
That's right.
So how difficult is it from the I kind of understand that developing the sensors and tweaking them is super difficult, but there I understand the difficulty, and it's kind of an iterative process. But when you are actually building hardware that is supposed to fit different people, different sizes, and we're not speaking just about one glove or one ring like the Mio I'm wearing on my arm, or some kind of other device like the controller of the Touch, the Oculus, which I need to hold in my hand, but we're actually speaking about very different shapes. Like, people come small, big, in terms of the height, in terms of their weight, in terms of how the bodies between different genders, and even, I guess, the different regions are distributed, right? So how are you going to address this particular huge issue?
Well, we do run general sizes, just like normal clothing.
That's clear, yeah. But it kind of needs to fit the body, right? It's kind of stretchy, but let's say I could be, half meter lower or half meter higher. I could, gain more pounds or lose more pounds. So you have like L, M, and XL, I guess, sizes. But do you do tests? Do you pick random people and put it on? Do you evaluate it?
For now, we made our own life easier. We built a measure. So we take the measurements from the person who's ordering it, and we literally build it to measure.
That's actually nice. Can you, is it a process that you could do mass scale?
That's what we're toying with, because majority of inventors, I'm from robotics engineering, and the principal inventors are from that field as well. So we're toying with the idea where
I mean, the lean principles are basically that you want to, you know, have one manufacturer that just does everything without redoing it, right?
Yeah, exactly. So if everything is robotized, then we can just literally, and this is what we're moving towards, is the booth that will actually take a photogrammetry measurement of the body, and we'll actually send the data to the factory, and the factory builds it to order.
Yeah. I mean, you can kind of, you know, at some point after, you know, 10 million people ordered your suit, you kind of have already an understanding how arms are, and you can just have, you know, 10 different versions based on probability, so you can obviously optimize it. Do you fear that sweat will, you know, attack the suit, or that in general the human body will have certain interactions with the suit itself?
Well, sweat is not an issue for us. I mean, the more sweat, the better conductivity, so it simplifies things.
And it also doesn't really lead to any oxidation of the electronic parts or anything?
Oh, no, no, we don't use metal at all, so there's no problem with oxidation here for us. Mm-hmm.
So, okay. And when we speak about vice versa, do you test how the materials you're using interact with the skin? Because
absolutely, yes.
I mean, I remember, what was it? I don't even remember. No, I don't remember. So it was like one of those fitness trackers that people started to wear, and it gave them an allergic reaction.
Ah, yeah.
Because, I mean, this is not just a tactile vest. Mm-hmm. Like, there is, I think, a company, was it? Even the sub pack is also kind of tactile vest. So you put it on top of you and it gives you a vest, which is great product, but you don't wear it on the skin. But this one is like skin wear, but also the whole body, basically.
Yeah, well,
how critical is it?
Part of certification process actually proving that it's hypoallergenic, that it doesn't create any problems with the skin.
Mm-hmm.
So all that is part of the tests that we have to go through in order to certify it. And we actually work with universities, specific universities that are actually taking care of materials to be hypoallergenic. So the actual fabric is super high tech. It takes the moist out. It controls the heat that has to go out as well, and it actually takes care of this sweat. So basically, it's being routed to where it's needed to, and taken away as much of it as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very comfortable to wear. So we are thinking about prolonged use. So we have to be very, you know, wearability is our key point.
Let's be honest. So far, not many people are wearing a VR headset longer than, you know, a few hours. So
yeah, exactly. So
luckily, you're not yet in a world where people are ready to spend more than, you know, 12 hours in VR. So
we're still not in Ready Player One environment.
We are moving there, but we're still not there. It's true. Is there a knowledge? Would it be correct to say that the suit itself is very similar to one of those diving suits? So it's kind of the same process of putting it on.
Well, it's like a sports tracksuit. I mean, it has a zip that you zip up. The sleeves, because they need to be snug fit, we've fitted zips in the sleeves as well. But otherwise, if the fit is perfect, we don't need those buckles that we have on the side as well. So it reduces
takes like
time.
1 minute to put it on.
Yeah, it's literally put it on, two, three zips, and you're ready to go.
And how is the reaction of people who try it so far?
Even the most skeptical person that I had to catch to put the suit on, it was like, you know, people didn't like the idea of EMS. Then I had to run around and actually try and get the suit off them for like half an hour, because they like the demo. They like the fact that you can shoot, but you can get shot, but you can shoot and actually play against other players. It places the avatar inside, so the level of immersiveness and
just increases. Yeah, it's crazy.
Novelty gets people very excited.
Is there any limitations? So people maybe with a pacemaker can't wear it or something?
Yeah, like pacemakers are the problem, and also the pregnancy would be a barrier. So pregnant women are not supposed to wear it. These are regulations from EMS in general, so we take it from top regulator.
So pregnant women and women, actually, and also pacemakers, I guess. piercings are not a problem?
Piercing is not an issue because, well, it depends on...
I mean, they're usually not out of iron, so they should not be very conductive anyway, right?
But even if it's conductive, I mean, the way we do the haptics, it's not like we're running electricity all over the body or like from one arm to another. So it shouldn't affect...
Very local, right?
So yeah, these are local sensations.
There are no shortcuts that can come through sweat or anything?
No.
No.
The way... Basically, we've gone through all of the laws of physics and...
No, true.
You can't cheat it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not particularly very educated on the laws of physics, so I have to trust you. I kind of know there is gravity and
yeah,
you know, an apple falls. That's okay. Okay, famous last words, because I think we are slowly coming to an end. You're on a road trip here in Germany. You're right now in Osnabrück. Where is the road going? Berlin, Hamburg?
Yeah, we're off to Hamburg now, and then shortly we arrive to Berlin, where we'll stay for a couple of days, 3 days maybe, to meet with all of the guys who are taking care of our VR world.
Okay, and when we think in terms of how people can reach you, so what's the best way to contact you? What's the best way to, you know, get in touch with your company? Is it through the website, through the email?
Yeah, website has a form at the bottom, which is good for developers. Guys, do put your projects in. We do sort them out, categorize them as well.
So, which is a website that people can reach you?
Our website is teslasuit.io, and we do come back, you know, that sends out an email to literally everyone who's involved in communication in the company. So, that's the easiest way to communicate. We also have Facebook, and the Facebook page is facebook.com/teslasuit.
Okay, perfect.
Messages there are a bit slower for some reason.
Yeah.
Business part of Facebook doesn't work well.
Yeah, it's...
But can also hit an email. But yeah, otherwise we're always reachable through the website.
Yeah, and I guess you would like, you know, a lot of developers to actually jump on the train and build their Ready Player One compatible application.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's get the Oasis up and running.
Yeah, that would be kind of awesome. Well, thank you very much for joining our lovely episode here. Also, thank you very much for coming to my city. Yeah. It saved me a lot of time traveling.
It was our pleasure.
So thank you very much for demoing it. I can tell it definitely works. It's, a product in development, but it's already more sophisticated than a lot of other prototypes I've seen in my life from different companies. So it's definitely very impressive. I mean, you are a big team working, you know, across the globe. So I, I see a lot of potential too, and I'm really excited.
Thanks. Thank you.
Dear listeners, you, as usual, can come to our Discord channel and discuss the episode with us. You can follow us on Twitter at ResearchVRcast. You can send us an email or researchvrcast@gmail.com. We have also a Facebook page under ResearchVR where we post and all those channels, usually the episodes on Discord, you can actually get in touch with us and contact us. And also, you know, suggest topics. Basically, we have some discussion thread there. And yes, I think the episode is over. Goodbye.